good morning, everyone, to the Middle East. This morning, there's a tenuous ceasefire in Libya as Muammar Gaddafi suddenly seems serious about finding a way out of that bloody military stalemate, although he hasn't agreed to leave power.
No, and literally. I think that would be the only reason why he agreed to a plan at all.
Yeah, the African Union negotiating some form of ceasefire and a kind of exit strategy there in Libya. Syrian unrest, meanwhile, brought out the army to deal with violence that has killed at least some civilians in the coastal city of Banias. And further demonstrations in Egypt over the weekend as civilians expressed their displeasure over the pace of change in that country, criticism of the army, and the army firing on demonstrators in Tahrir Square. Meanwhile, it has been one senior official after another visiting Saudi Arabia. Of all the nations in the region in turmoil right now, none has a closer alliance with the U.S. than Saudi Arabia. Defense Secretary Robert Gates was there late last week, while the White House National Security Advisor Tom Donilon arrives there today. Joining us to talk about the importance of this alliance and, where the weaknesses might be is Martin Indyk, former U.S. Ambassador to Israel, Assistant Secretary of State for the Near East during the Clinton administration, and he's currently the Director of Foreign Policy at the Brookings Institution. Martin Indyk, good morning.
Good morning.
So, first of all, describe what the frailties are in the current Saudi regime. We know that the king is old, actually just returned from a prolonged visit for medical reasons here in the United States. How long for this world is the king and the royal family at this point?
Well, as they say, Allah will decide that. God will decide. But he's in his mid-80s. He's not well. His crown prince could well die before he does. That's Prince Sultan. Standing behind him is Prince Nayef, the Minister of Interior, who's a very hardliner. And behind the crackdown that Saudi Arabia instigated in neighboring Bahrain by sending its troops in there, essentially you've got a gerontocracy that doesn't function very well at the moment. And when it looks out at its borders, it sees the flames of revolt licking at every one of them. In Yemen, you've got a revolt. The country's imploding, probably to the benefit of Al-Qaeda, who may have the United States as its enemy, but for sure its real strategic adversary is Saudi Arabia. Over on the Arabian Peninsula, he's got Bahrain, which is a Shia majority country, and so the king of Saudi Arabia sees that as a potential Iranian cat's paw. To his north is Iraq, where there's a Shia majority government, and he sees that just as the Persians coming at him. Then there's Jordan, Syria, and of course Hosni Mubarak, who was his partner in stabilizing the whole region, is gone already. So just on every front, he seems to be besieged. And his answer to this is not the kind of political reform and trumpeting of universal rights that our president believes in. On the contrary, he believes in not giving any measure to the protesters and basically suppressing them. And so we have a quiet crisis in the relationship between the United States and Saudi Arabia as a result.
And there have been many descriptions over the weekend that there is tension in this relationship, but in the annals of, diplomatically looking the other way, Martin Indyk, and I'm sure you're someone who's experienced not at actually doing this, but in watching it, I mean, the U.S. really overlooks a whole lot in its relationship with the Saudis. There is no constitution, absolute monarchy since the 1930s. Women aren't even allowed to drive in Saudi Arabia. There's essentially a theocratic running of a lot of civic life inside Saudi Arabia. I mean, at what point does the U.S. actually have to begin a dialogue on real reform, and how do you even do it?
Well, this is where our dilemmas come home to roost, if they can do that. We do look the other way. We do make an exception with Saudi Arabia because it's the world's largest oil producer. And it's the only oil producer that has the capacity to increase its production significantly so as to tamp down the pressure on the price of oil. If there's instability in Saudi Arabia as a result of its people demanding the kind of political freedom that we've seen across the Middle East, that could put the oil price into shock. And, if you have $200 a barrel of oil, then that could put paid to the United States economic recovery and even the prospects for the president's re-election. So there's a lot of reason to look the other way, but there's a real question about whether that can work anymore. Is Saudi Arabia really going to be the exception when this revolution is crossing the whole of the Middle East? And so that's why I don't think it's a viable strategy anymore to look the other way. We've got to try to develop a new compact with the king and his brothers, in which he basically allows the other, the smaller sheikhs and kings around him in Bahrain and Jordan and elsewhere, to move forward down the road towards constitutional monarchy, and he takes some meaningful steps, and in return, we reassure him that we'll be with him, we'll support him, and we won't pull the rug out from under him.
But Martin, it seems as though the dialogue is not necessarily exclusively with the royal family. We're talking with the head of foreign policy at the Brookings Institution. Listen to this bit of tape from our partner, the BBC. It's a Saudi teacher, a 40-year-old named Khalid, speaking to Sue Lloyd Roberts just last month.
Why do you feel you need to demonstrate?
Yes, because I need freedom. I need democracy. The royal family don't own us. They don't own us. I have a right to speak. If you speak, they will put you in jail after 5 minutes. They will put you in jail after 5 minutes if you speak, if you see anything.
You're not scared?
I'm not scared. Everybody here wants to be in jail. Because all country is a big deal.
What's Barack Obama's message to that person speaking in Saudi Arabia, Martin Indyk?
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.